Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Take it quickly.
Oh, wonderful thinking. Origi, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant from Liverpool. And for Barcelona, chaotic, catastrophic. And it's four. And they do lead now, not just on the night, but on aggregate.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. One of the memorable days in the history of the sport. There's no way around it.
I don't know what to say. I rewatched the whole thing last night.
You found the words. You've managed to.
I don't know what to say.
You've said it right there. Caught offside. Barcelona, caught offside. Caught napping. Last goal, caught napping.
Almost.
Not even in the picture.
That voice you're hearing is someone who is as iconic as perhaps the night that happened last night to Liverpool Football Club. Bruce Grobbelaar, welcome to Caught Offside.
Thank you very much indeed, gentlemen.
This is a unique honour for me. At home, upstairs in our house in Ireland, is a jersey waiting to be signed. And had Andrew given me due notice, or more notice...
You're going to say that.
I would have got DHL to send it over. It's your green jersey.
The candy one.
The candy one.
Oh, there we go.
The most iconic jersey. The jersey I remember you in from my youth. So, listen, it's just brilliant to have you here.
Yeah. Bruce is here promoting the Western Union Cup, which is going to be here in the U.S. this summer, specifically Liverpool's match against Sporting Lisbon. It's going to be at Yankee Stadium Wednesday, July 24th. Something tells me, given all that's happened lately, that ticket kind of sells itself. That game will sell out. There's just no way around it. Tickets go on sale Thursday, May 9th, liverpoolfc.com/tickets. We'll talk more about that shortly. But first, what we were just talking about, everything that happened yesterday in the Champions League semifinal. Bruce, can you just tell us how do you take in these games now? Where were you watching it? The feelings that you're feeling as a Liverpool man as that's all going down.
Okay, I'll take you back to the first leg. I was asked by FSM, FSG a group and Liverpool Football Club to come out here to promote the games here in America, especially the one at the Yankee Stadium on the 24th of July. But I said, could I tell you after the game? And I said, well, New York, second leg. I said, okay, I'll go and do it. Little did I know that just before the game. And then we ended up 3-0 down. So I, said, yes, I'm coming over. I didn't mind coming over. People said to me, I was crazy to say that Liverpool will come back. People looked at me and even ostracized me, saying they've got no chance against the greatest team in the world. But I had a belief, and everybody has a belief. Once you're in the Liverpool family, you never disbelieve that you can't come back from anything that Liverpool have been through. You go back to St. Etienne, 3-1 down, came back. Istanbul, 2005. In 45 minutes, came back. 2008 at Cardiff Stadium, came back against West Ham in the FA Cup. Here we got 90 minutes. And Barcelona, yes, we took a hammering there at Barcelona. We conceded 3 goals. We played magnificently well. Their goalkeeper made 3 brilliant stops in the first leg. We hit the crossbar. We missed 2 sitters. So the game, the scoreline didn't reflect the game that was played. They had to come to Anfield. They know what they're going to get. Suarez knew. Messi didn't. He just thought, well, he can do the same thing. And what we did with that game, we needed an early goal. We got it. Half-time, 1-0 down. A 1-0 down, they were thinking, we don't want another PSG. Well, they took their eye off the ball. We stopped the ball getting to Messi. We turned it round. And Wijnaldum was magnificent. Trent and Alexander-Arnold. What quick thinking.
Incredible.
Quick thinking. He turned around, waited for the other ball to be rolled off, and he walked away from the ball.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it put Barcelona on just a nice mode. And from behind the goal, if you have a look at their goalkeeper, Stig, whatever his name
Ter Stegen.
Is. Ter Stegen. He's looking downfield. Piqué is looking downfield. There's no one in the near post. Trent looked up, looked at that, and said, thank you very much. Put the ball in. Thank you. It's game over.
Yeah.
What an unbelievable, iconic moment.
It's the kind of play you're watching. You think, how come that doesn't happen more often? I mean, it was such heads-up thinking that I guess it's just asking a lot of players to react that way.
Well, quick thinking. You know, it's a corner kick. Trent Alexander-Arnold walked away three paces.
Yeah.
As if he wasn't going to be taking the corner kick. They switched off. Goalkeeper looking downfield. Piqué looking downfield. Not even marking Divock Origi. Divock Origi looked up at Trent, gave him a little bit of a nod. He came back. Thank you very much.
As a goalkeeper, Bruce, do you blame Ter Stegen for that? Because I'm assuming when the ball goes out for a corner kick, straight away, you are the lord of the manor.
Organizing everybody right. in your box. You have to do it. The worst time to switch off is when the ball is out of play. That is the worst time, and especially around your box. When the ball's out of play, you've got to keep alive. As a goalkeeper, you've got to get everybody in that area in their positions. He didn't. He just thought, oh, well, he's moved away from the ball. The ball's not going to come in. Sorry for that. Two steps later, quick thinking, the ball's in swinger, nobody at the near post. Divock Origi reacted, put the ball in the back of the net.
Now, you played with Alan Hansen, who would be equivalent to Virgil van Dijk right now. I'm assuming that even then, the responsibility was on you to tell Hansen and Gary Gillespie, whoever it was, where they need to be.
Goalkeepers are in charge of their 18-yard area, the whole area. So when any player comes into that area, the captain is the goalkeeper. Not Virgil van Dijk, not anybody else. If you're defending, you are in charge. You are the man of the main man of that little enclave of the field. Nobody can tell you what to do. You telling them, and that is a big, big mistake. Very big mistake. You don't switch off when the ball is out of play, and especially if someone walks away from the ball like that.
Right.
Oh, we're just suckering you in. Thank you very much. Bang. There we go. There's another goal. There's a goal.
One thing you were kind of talking about before, this idea of the belief within Liverpool that they can do this, and it's something that we've heard so much about throughout the season, but really now, waking up this morning, I mean, it's the story everywhere, this belief that they carry with them. And look, I'll be honest, you know, JJ will bring up all the time, oh, European night at Anfield, European night, and I roll my eyes. And today and yesterday, having watched that game, you start to think, okay, there is something to this. You played in some of those European nights. What makes... You know, try to convey to me what makes it different at Anfield as opposed to some of these other great venues.
Well, when you go to Anfield and when you sign for Anfield, you don't sign for a team, you sign for a family. When you go to Anfield, it's not a stadium, it's a home. And you're going home. And those people that are in the stadium are your family. We've now promoting the extended family here in the States. You got 49 official Liverpool supporters clubs here in the United States. Those are family. Anybody who puts on a Liverpool shirt is still in that family. We believe that our football team will always go out there and give 100%. You have to. If you can believe it, let's say, if you can dream it, you believe it, you go and do it.
Bruce, do you think it's fair to say that certainly under Shankly and onwards with the boot room, that sense of family was in the club? It was just natural because it was almost like a succession. It was almost like a royal family. Everybody grew up under everybody else.
Yeah.
And that lineage broke up somewhat. Would you accept the idea that Jurgen Klopp, with his charisma, with the way he makes every player seem important, like for example Shaqiri, who has become a bit part player, and then tonight... or last night, comes up with a brilliant cross after another one at the weekend. Would you give Jurgen Klopp the credit for creating that environment, that culture? Or not creating it, but bringing it back?
You're going to have to look at how it evolved. And you go back to the management. I'm looking at FSM. They came in. They've known which type of manager they needed. They got it. Jurgen Klopp is the only manager since, I would say, Shankly has got the charisma that knows the fans inside out. He's got this feeling that these fans are very, very special. And with that, he's been allowed to get into the mold, get the players that they needed. And the management team of the whole company, you're looking at very, very astute a way that they've actually allowed Liverpool to go into the transfer market.
Mm.
Take, for instance, Virgil van Dijk. Everybody scoffed at 75 million. You're playing a world record for a center half. It is the position that we needed. FSM management said, right, you got it. We bought him. We plugged the hole. Then they looked at the other area that we needed, the goalkeeper. Played, I think it was 68 million for him. Another huge amount of money. It was a world record at the time. Thank goodness, 2 weeks later, Chelsea bought the goalkeeper for 72 million and broke that record. So it didn't have that stigma of, oh, he's the most expensive goalkeeper in the league, right, in the world. So that took that off his shoulders. From there, we've got the backbone of the scene, the spine. And everything around us, it was magnificently developed in the transfer market. We picked up Milner for nothing when Sterling went away. That is a revelation. We had a young player in Robinson. We picked him up for relatively nothing. And then we've got Trent Alexander-Arnold that came through the youth system and everything, just blending together magnificently well. We've got two youngsters that are coming through, Woodburn and the other, I can't remember the other, but these great, great players are coming.
We have the boy at Derby County as well.
Well, he's on loan, so yeah. So the management team is the one that you've got to have a look at. It is magnificently put together. Jurgen Klopp is charismatic, and the coaching side of doing an absolutely sterling job.
Bruce, I'm curious, this run-in that Liverpool are in the midst of right now, both in Europe and then domestically with their battle with Manchester City, I mean, how tough is it for them to be contending the way they are on multiple fronts like this?
Football is not an easy sport, and you play so many games in so many in so many months in the season. Plus, if you go through all the competitions, you're playing even more. Going through this season from last season, if we ended up with nothing, if we end up with nothing, we still improved. From in the Premiership last season, we were 20 points behind Manchester City. If it happens that we come second, we've gained 19 points on them in 1 year. So it is an improvement. We now, I said on the radio and on another radio program, Sirius with Roger Marsh and Tommy Smith, I said, if we have 3 games left, and they said 3 games, I said yes. If we got 3 games left, that means that we've won tomorrow, this tie tonight, which was yesterday, and then we've got another 2, which will be the end of the season game against Wolverhampton Wanderers, and then the Champions League final. Well, we did, and we've got now 2 games left. We are in the Champions League final. And that's going to put a message to Manchester City because, you know, we are not going away anywhere.
Psychologically, how tough is this time of year? Because for the large bulk of your career, well, at least prior to the ban, Liverpool were competing at the business end in Europe every season and competing for league titles against Everton or whoever it may have been in the 1980s. That is got to be draining. Like, for example, Liverpool now have finished that game tonight and they're going in against Wolves for the title. Are you tired? Are you drained? Are you running on fumes? Are you running on elation, adrenaline? What is it?
In our day, we loved the way that it actually panned out. We played 2 games in a week. So we got a day off after the game. We come in for light training the next day, and then sometimes it's another light training session, and then we've got the game, which actually kick-started. If you have a look at the philosophy of Liverpool since Shankly actually put together this philosophy that you don't go to the training ground and then shower and change and go home. You get on a bus back from the training ground to Anfield. And whilst you're in the bus, you're cooling down.
Okay.
When you get into Anfield in your dressing rooms, there'll be two baths. One hot bath at about an 82 to 85 degrees, and the other one just above freezing. So you'll go in the hot bath for 4 minutes, you go in the get out and go in the cold bath for a minute. And you do that three times, then you can shower and change and go home. So his philosophy is now what they're doing today. After training sessions, they go into their training in the dressing rooms.
Right.
And there's an ice bath for them. They go in there for 3 minutes tops, bang, there we go. Get out, go and take a shower, go and have your lunch and go for a sleep. So Shankly was well before his time. And it's the philosophy of Liverpool that has evolved over the years.
I'm going to start doing that.
Oh, yeah. After
every podcast. I won't even shave until the end of the season, so I will do this.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You're going to be one of those that if we don't win anything, that beard is going to grow longer.
Yeah,
longer
I'm telling
until
you.
We won it.
I'm going to look like Moses.
Rip Van Winkle. Bruce Grabelaar, kind enough to join us here in studio on Caught Offside, talking about Liverpool's win yesterday. We'll get into a little bit more, but first, I know you're here promoting the Western Union Cup, Liverpool coming to the U.S., and my God, the timing couldn't be better. I'm surprised you're not already in line outside of Yankee Stadium.
I've got my tickets already. Yeah. I know people.
But tell us a little bit about this tour and how much fun this is potentially going to be.
Well, Western Union are one of our sponsors, and they've put up on the Western Union Cup to bring Liverpool to play against three different teams over here in the United States. You start off in Notre Dame on the 19th against Borussia Dortmund. So that is a very, very nice game. You know, good German side and a good test for Liverpool in the preseason. 21st, Liverpool moved to Fenway, the home of the owners and of Liverpool FC. They're going there, and it'll be great for our team to go home. To another home in Fenway Park, to play against the oldest club in Spain, in Sevilla. So, and Sevilla, very, very good side and good test as well. And then coming here to New York, the last game. What a beautiful place to come to.
Absolutely.
Yeah? New York, the city that never sleeps.
That's right.
Yankee Stadium on the 24th against, who is it?
Sporting.
Sporting,
right?
Sporting Lisbon. I know that there's a large Portuguese community in the Bronx. So, yes, the Portuguese people will go there and support whichever team they want. But they're coming to a game. And the timing is absolutely perfect, as you said. And after the Champions League final, it'll even be bigger.
Bruce, is it fair to say that preseason tours nowadays were quite different to preseason tours back in the day? Now, I'm not trying to stitch you up here, but Stevie Nicol showed me a picture, and I think you guys were in either Denmark or Norway on a preseason tour. I guess I'm thinking it's the end of late 80s, maybe 87, 88, around that direction. And he told me to look at the picture, and it's all you guys is Ray Houghton, John Aldridge, and you know, all the legends. You're all stood there, and there's a pool table, and you look fine. You're in casual wear. And then he said, look closely, and you can see every one of you hiding a pint glass behind your backs. The culture has changed somewhat. I'm assuming that won't be happening on this trip.
No, listen, it is now gone scientifically.
Yeah.
If you have a look at what you've put in your body in the old days, well, you see, I come from Africa, and I do the analogy a little bit differently. You know, in modern day, they eat a lot of pasta and rice and the carbs and everything. Well, we had it in our day as well. Well, the carbs are the malt, barley, and the hops, and we drank a lot of water with it.
So that's how you talked your way around that one. Yeah, exactly.
Healthy diet. Now,
listen, we've on preseason tours, the 84 European Cup.
Yes.
A week before, we were in Israel.
Yeah.
Drinking and swimming and doing, you know, before we went to go and play the biggest game in Europe.
Graham Souness says that relaxed you guys.
Oh, of course it did. Relaxed us. Absolutely. Went into the stadium in Rome and, yeah, we won it.
Bruce, the penalty. Graziano, was it?
Graziani, yes.
Was that off the cuff? So let me set the scene for our listeners. It's a vital penalty. Mm-hmm. And the Roman player comes up, the Roma player sets it down, and you begin a repertoire of jumping up and down.
No, spaghetti. Never jumped up.
You didn't jump up?
No. I just ran in there like someone who... My legs were going the other way, and it looks like I had spaghetti legs.
Spaghetti legs, yeah. Right. And, was that off the cuff? Or had you planned beforehand? You said, this goes to penalties, I'm going to act a clown.
No. Well, let me put the scene back again. Joe Fagan was the manager. Stevie Nicol misses the first penalty because he wasn't supposed to take it.
No, that's right.
It was full nil. But Stevie Nicol got the ball and walked in the box. So when I was going to the goal for my first penalty, I got this arm around me. I didn't have to look up because I could smell Joe Fagan's cigarette. And he just said, listen, myself and the coaches, the chairman and directors, the captain and the team, the wives and the girlfriends, and I'm thinking, where is he going with this? And the 20,000 fans that actually came here from Liverpool, I'm not going to blame you. Oh, geez. If you can't stop a ball from 12 yards. So I'm thinking, I heard the blame word. And, oh, he said not. Oh, I said, thanks, Gaffer. He shouted when I was about 5 meters away. But try and put them off. The two players that I put off was Bruno Conti.
Yes.
Bruno Conti came there as if he was dancing and everything. And I didn't like that easy. He was a little bit cocky. So I put my hands on my knees. And I did the 60s dance of swapping the knees over.
Right.
And he looked at me thinking, geez, you know what? Took two paces backwards. I did exactly the same when he was just about to take the penalty. And he took two paces and blasted the ball over the bar. And I thought, hey, it might work. Well, then Graziani, he picks the ball up and he goes and puts his arm around the referee. And that's when I went into the net and bit the net. I'm going, yo, what's this idiot? He can't touch the referee. That's ungentlemanly conduct. So now he comes to the line and he puts the ball down. Sorry, he kisses the ball, puts it down and crosses himself. And that's when I walked in, ran in like that. Yeah. And then he looked at me, crossed himself again, and I gave him a little bit of a spaghetti leg. And he did exactly the same thing. I knew he was going to go to my right, his left, but he changed his mind. He scooped the ball, hit the bar, and went over. And I was supposed to take the fifth penalty. I was running around the field like this. Alan Kennedy gets the ball. He gets in the box. And I said, hey, Gaffer, what's the matter? He says, if you run around for 20 seconds, someone else is going to take the penalty. And you know you're going to wait with us and watch him take the penalty. And you can suffer like the rest of us.
That's incredible.
Alan Kennedy goes and slots it in. Thank goodness he did. Imagine if I had taken the penalty and missed. Oh, thank you very much. Not worth thinking about.
No.
Bruce, you've been so generous with your time. Only a couple more for you here. There's just so much. My God, there's just so
I
much.
I know. We're not even. Good Lord.
I did want to ask you, you've lived a life that is hard for a lot of just regular sports fans to fathom. You've fought in war. You're a professional football player. You were at Hillsborough and Heisel. I mean, how have some of these moments, you've been a part of such incredible moments that people can't really even conceptualize. How have they molded you?
Well, from the ages of 17 to 19, I was in a war in Rhodesia. And I was a grade A tracker, so for the best part of a year, I was following enemy and in behind enemy lines and everything. I was a fire force unit where you go into the bush with three other people, and those guys you got to look after. I was the stick leader and everything at my age. So from there on then, it was the spur. What grew me is when we had 6 months to go and I looked at my fellow comrades and I said, listen, if I get out of this war, I'd like to play for Liverpool. And they looked at each other and said, go away, we've got an ambush tonight. And there's a 1 in 3 chance one of us are going to get shot in the ambush. Or one of us did. It wasn't the fella that said it. But he, just a nice flesh wound. He's a mate and he's still alive today. Uh-huh. And that, when I came out of the war, I immediately went to South Africa. 18 months in South Africa playing professional football, I get called up in the South African army to go back and be sent to Angola because I'm a tracker. And I said, no. And that's when I came to the UK, and then eventually ended up in Vancouver. But if I believe that I would play for Liverpool, I dreamt it, I believed it, and I did it. So it's not impossible. Once you dream something, believe that you can do it, and you can do it. It made me the man that I was. Living through Liverpool and all the ups and downs, I've been two tragedies with Liverpool. First in Heysel. I believe in Heysel it was not Liverpool fans. I still believe it today. There's a lot to be answered about that one as well. And then Hillsborough. Hillsborough, I cannot say much about it because there's an ongoing inquiry.
Yeah, that's correct.
And there will be justice for the 96. I keep the 96 badge with me all the time. I've lived in that moment, and I will still believe that there will be justice for those people.
Bruce, New York is probably one of the homes of talk therapy, where people go and talk about things they've seen. Death is a constant in your life. There's no two ways about that. And that is quite challenging for any human being to be able to deal with. Have you ever spoken to anyone about these things?
Yes, I have on an occasion, because I'm allowed to talk to kids back home, drug addicts back home, ex-servicemen back home that are in the similar position that I am in. PTSD runs in everybody.
Yes.
And if you do not talk about it, and especially in men, men keep it inside them. And they won't talk about what has happened in their lives. And all of a sudden, they're not there anymore. They go and do themselves in. And if you can get to that person and try and get him to talk about it, it gives you the greatest aspect of how to get around in the mind of a person that's got PTSD. There's a lot of people that have got it. Ex-servicemen, and I know in this country that there's a lot done for ex-servicemen, ex-drug addicts, and everything that on the verge of suicide. If you can get into groups to get with these people and get lecturers that can bring it out of them, it makes the place a much better place to live in. And I believe we live in a beautiful, beautiful world. It's only the people that mess it up.
Yeah. Bruce, final one for me, and we'll bring it all the way back around to where we started, and that was the way you consume these games now as a fan. Liverpool are going to Madrid. Will you be going with them?
No, I won't. And I'm telling you why. 2005, every year I've got a golf tour that goes to South Africa. In 2005, we were in South Africa. We found a little bar, Hunter's Rest, in a place called Annerley. We watched the 2005 final in there. Mm-hmm. We were three down in halftime. I was outside. I didn't want to watch the second half until Stevie G scored the first. I got inside, and there we go, and we won it. So for the first time in all this time since 2005, I've got a golf tour in South Africa exactly on the Champions League final.
You're going on that tour.
Oh, yes. Oh, don't yes. worry. I'm there. I'll be in the place there, Neisner in George, Neisner, Western Cape, and I'll be watching it in a pub with the rest of the golfers, the other 11, and we'll be watching it there. And believe me when I say we're going to lift it.
Oh, man.
And that you won't be going outside if Liverpool go down 3-0.
No.
You keep that belief.
One last thing.
I don't believe that we are going to concede 3 again in this competition.
Oh, knock on wood. Bruce, one last thing from me. We have a new, relatively young goalkeeper. If you had any advice for him going into a European Cup final, what would that be?
Line your walls up properly like you did the second leg. He learned from his mistakes. He was immense in the second leg. Unbelievable one-on-one with Suarez. Brilliant. Just carry on and do the same thing. Own your box, because in previous games he hasn't owned his box. He owned his box in that second leg in that of the final. In the final, you're going to a neutral ground, Madrid. You're going there. Go and own the boxes.
Bruce Grobbelaar, Liverpool legend. What an honor this has been. This is awesome. Tickets go on sale for the Western Union Cup Thursday, May 9th at liverpoolfc.com/tickets. Yankee Stadium, Liverpool will be there. I know you'll be there as well.
We'll be there as European champions again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, six times.
Yes. Bruce, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All the very best.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.